We're back.
Okay, we're in class number 25 again, right? And we are here to discuss business ethics. We're going to say the joke again. But you have to laugh if you can because we don't want to know that we're recording. Is that whether or not it's an oxymoron? That was a little fake. The laugh track was no good. We're here to discuss the idea of this concept of the business of business is business. The business of business is business. Now, I'm quoting that. I put that in our roadmap, right? That at the end of the day, there's a distinction between how I behave in my everyday life and how I behave in business. And what I want to discuss is, as we open up our question, what are some of the ethical conflicts in the business world? And more importantly, are the goals the same as the Torah? Okay, we live in a capitalistic society, and we discussed in the past, we opened up a class once, and we said, does Judaism endorse a socialistic society, socialism, right? And we concluded, we came to some form of conclusion that Judaism believes very much that everyone needs to be taken care of one way or another. Every member of society needs to be taken care of, needs to be financially supported in some way. However, they don't believe in sharing all of the pot. That's socialism. They do believe, again, that everyone is, that you have to share some portion, but not equally. So there is a capitalistic idea in Judaism. The question is this capitalism that we know today, is this the same, does it jive with our Torah's ethics, with our tradition's ethics?
How does capitalism protect the individual?
Well, that's a good question, right? Their capitalism doesn't necessarily, in theory, doesn't protect the individual. The government and society and the government and the laws that come in to protect these individuals, right? If the capitalism and the way it was when the monopolies came in, they didn't care about anything. And before unions, they didn't care about anything. That was, you know, you did whatever you needed to do. Then the government came in and allowed, and you had, you know, AFL, Samuel Gompers, right? Remember all this from elementary school? Right, CIO, ABC, this all goes back to like sixth grade, right? So it's somewhere in my brain, right? So they came in and they made things, forced things to change, but the capitalistic mentality and philosophy was basically get whatever you need to get, whatever you can get. So what now, even in today's society, right? Today's society with all the laws that are there to regulate business, etc. What are the goals of business and what are the Torah's goals? So what are the goals of business?
Make money.
Right? Ooh, I'm going to do it. Okay? The goal of business is either A, is to make money. Right? What are the Torah's goals? To make good souls. In business. The Torah's goals of business.
You
got to make money.
To be fair and just.
No, you
got to
support your family.
I have to support my family.
You have to be ethical.
Okay, I'm supporting the indigent, but I'm also supporting everything. If I have a business, right, what's my business? My business is to sell
bagels.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice Jewish business, right? Okay, so my business is to sell bagels, right? My goal is to make money, right? Irrespective, my goal is going to make money, but what else is my goal? And that's in any business.
In the Torah?
To perpetuate the business?
No. To hire people.
To keep the business going, to hire people. What's my goal?
Make money.
Today and tomorrow.
Well, to support your values.
Family. Support? What does that mean, support your values? At the end of the day, I got to buy diapers, right?
Money.
To give tzedakah. Make a lot of money to give tzedakah. These are what we call rabbi answers. You know what rabbi's answers? These are the answers that you think the rabbi wants to hear, right? That's what I call rabbi answers.
Status.
My goal in the business is to grow the business. We've gotten so... This is such a bad statement in society today. My goal, I'm a bagel boy, right? My goal is to provide a service.
Right. Who will make money?
No, it isn't.
Somebody needs bagels, and I'm going to be the one who's going to give it to them,
that's
right?
That's not a Torah goal.
That's a goal in business.
That's a method.
I thought you said a Torah goal.
It's a way of fulfilling a goal.
I have a business. My business is to provide a service. Now, I hope to make money on it, right? But there, when you have a business, one of the things you're looking at is to make a living. The other thing is to provide a service for society.
That everybody
needs.
I got good bagels. You want me to go... I didn't pick bagels. It wasn't my fault, right? I have great bagels. You want a bagel. I'm going to provide you with bagels, right? You will pay me to get your bagel. I'm here to provide a service. Right? There are different ways to provide services. Service is a smile, service, blah, blah, blah. But that is, we are so focused on the money, we forget that it's a service-oriented world. Right? We are supposed to be there to provide a service. It's not all about the money.
What has that got to do with ethics?
These are not mutually exclusive at all. Right? I could try to make money and still provide a service. I could still provide a service. And my focus still could be providing a service and still want to make money, right? However, the question is, I think, is that what is our goal? What is the ultimate goal? When you're making money, right, and you're in business ethics, so to speak, then I think the focus is probably on rights. When I say rights, I mean, what are my rights to make money? Right? What are my rights to make money? I can't steal, right? Those are my restrictions, right? But I could advertise my bagel place. I could say, buy two bagels, get one free, and then say, I just ran out of those bagels, you have to buy new bagels, right? Or whatever it is. I don't do bagels.
You're
going to
be a loss leader?
I could do bait and switch. That's what bait and switch is. What are my rights that I have to make money? As opposed to, no, there are many restrictions, but I'm looking for my rights. I'm looking at how to circumvent the restrictions in order to make money, right? My in-laws have a very strange business. My father-in-law, this is going to be recorded, it's terrible. Anyway, my father-in-law calls himself the youngest retired rabbi in history. He was a rabbi for a year and a half, and they fired him. At the age of like 22, he said it was the greatest thing ever happened to him because he went into business very successful. So thank God, you know, boy, this was the greatest thing that ever happened to him, right? So his business is that he's a real estate consultant. He provides ways of that building owners call him up, how to get around the system. Right? How to get rent increases. How to do this because you have rent control. Right? So he does all this. He does all this stuff.
I know him and several others.
Anyway. That's very funny. He does all this stuff, all legal, et cetera, et cetera. But they're there to get the most rights in order to make money. However, the other perspective, I think, is, or at least I'm proposing, is in regards to provide services, the question is what are my duties?
To do it ethically.
What are my duties to society? More than just doing it ethically.
To not scam
What are my responsibilities
to
the people?
Sure not to scam people. Don't get
not
sick.
Just make sure it's clean.
But they can't get
make
sick.
Sure it's done right because then the people need the service.
Can't hurt.
And I don't want to hurt the people.
That they had.
Yeah,
geez. What happened to the milk?
Half pints of milk.
I missed
they
that.
Didn't clean out the machines.
Yeah.
Kids got sick.
Oh.
Yeah, they think it's with planting. Whatever.
Right. Well, again, that now you could say they did something wrong. And it might have been a mistake, right? But the question is, what? And it's the same act. It's the same product. The question is it they were making a mistake because they were trying to figure out a way to get out of the system? Right, and say these are my rights. I'm trying to make more money. I could save time and money, or they made a mistake. They didn't provide the duty, which is to provide healthy milk for children to grow and not get sick. Right. Either way, you're still there to make money. You're still there to provide a service. It depends what your outlook is. And so I think when we talk about the business is business. Right. The question is Torah's perspective is there are rights. But the focus should be duties. And the capitalistic perspective is, there are duties, right, but the focus are rights. Everybody with me?
I'm sorry, I
No, I'll do it again. Okay? The difference is, it's all about perspective. It's all, in the capitalistic world, it's all about what, how much money can I make? What are my rights and how much money can I make? Torah says, the tradition says, you can make as much money as you want. However, remember what your focus is. What are my duties to society? What are my responsibilities? What's my goal? I'm providing a service. How do I do that? Now, again, they're both in one of the same. They're both included in each other. However, it's all perspective. And with that, changes a whole lot. Now, let's look how many ways you could abuse the system, right? They have a great case study. It kind of makes you nauseous, right? This case study is on page... Just scream it out for us.
386.
Thank you. Page 386. We have this article by Albert Z. Carr. Is business bluffing ethical? Okay. The ethics of business are not those of society, but rather those of the poker game.
Thanks.
A respected businessman with whom I discussed the theme of this article remarked with some heat, "You mean to say you're going to encourage men to bluff? Why, bluffing is nothing more than a form of lying. You're advising them to lie." I reminded my friend that millions of businessmen now feel constrained every day to say yes to their bosses when they secretly believe no, that this is generally accepted as permissible strategy when the alternative might be the loss of a job. Correct? Everybody's nodding. Yes. The essential point, I said, is that the ethics of business are game ethics different from the ethics of religion. That's his proposal. He remained unconvinced. Referring to the company in which he is president, he declared, "Maybe that's good enough for some businessmen, but I can tell you that we pride ourselves on our ethics. In 30 years, not one customer has ever questioned my word or asked to check our figures. We're loyal to our customers and fair to our suppliers. I regard my handshake on a deal as a contract. I've never entered into price-fixing schemes with my competitors. I've never allowed my salesmen to spread injurious rumors about other companies. Our union contract is the best in our industry, and if I do say so myself, our ethical standards are of the highest." Is he a tzaddik? Is he a righteous person?
Certainly not humble.
Well, yeah. Well, he's proud of you. You can take pride in your business. It's not him. It's his business. I take pride in who I work for. Right? I work for the Jewish people. Right. Yeah. is he a righteous person?
We don't know that for sure.
We don't know so far. So far, what do you got? You think he's a righteous person?
So far.
I say no! Is that a righteous person?
I love them so good.
I set her up for that. It was a deal as long as I took the bagel business. I say no. I say he's just doing what he's supposed to do. That doesn't make him a tzaddik. It doesn't make him a righteous person. It makes him a normal ethical person. That doesn't make him anything greater than it is. We talked about that last week in our class about. Someone who tithes, right? We see someone who tithes and says, "Oh, they're so wonderful." No! The minimum is to tithe. That's what you're supposed to do. You're not gonna get, you don't get any accolades from me until you go and above and beyond. Right? This guy is doing what he's supposed to do. Not only that, but you're right. You'll see, he might be a greaseball also. He really was saying, line 30, without me realizing it, that he was living up to the ethical standards of the business game, which are a far cry from those of private life. Like a gentlemanly poker player, he did not play in cahoots with others at the table, try to smear their reputations or hold back chips he owed them. He was doing the right thing. However, but this same fine man at the very time was allowing one of his products to be advertised in a way that makes it sound a great deal better than it actually was. Another item in his product line was notorious among dealers for its built-in obsolescence. Mm-hmm. He was holding back from the market a much improved product because he did not want it to interfere with sales of the inferior item it would have replaced. He had joined with certain of his competitors in hiring a lobbyist to push a state legislator, by methods that he preferred not to know too much about, into amending a bill that then being enacted. What do we think of him now?
He's going down.
Mm-hmm.
He's
going down.
Just like the rest of us.
Right. Well, that's what this article is saying. Is he's no different. Right? But he's within the confines of the law. But that's not ethical. Let's continue. In his view, these things had nothing to do with ethics. They were merely normal business practice. He himself undoubtedly avoided outright falsehoods, never lied in so many words, but the entire organization that he ruled was deeply involved in numerous strategies of deception. We can learn a great deal about the nature of business by comparing it with poker. No one expects poker to be played on the ethical principles preached in churches. In poker, it is right and proper to bluff a friend out of the rewards of being dealt a good hand. Poker's own brand of ethics is different from the ethical ideals of civilized human relationships. The game calls for distrust with the other fellow. It ignores the claim of friendship. Cunning, deception, and concealment of one's strength and intentions, not kindness and open-heartedness, are vital in poker. No one thinks any worse of poker on that account. By the way, that's not true. I do. And one should think any... and I'm not the only one, so does the Talmud. And one should think any of the worst of the game of business because its standards of right and wrong differ from the prevailing traditions of morality in our society. What has become norm doesn't necessarily mean that it's ethical. Normal business practices. Everybody does it. Doesn't mean it's ethical. I'm going to discuss advertising. I'm going to discuss various marketing techniques. I like the idea of the obsolescence, right? Where you have, how many times you hear this, right? Where somebody, oh, they have a new, everything's new and improved, right? Even dog food tastes better. I don't know who's the guy who checked that out, right? But everything's new and improved, right? What does that mean? What does that mean to me? How does that get me? Is that an ethical thing to say if I have no way of knowing any better? Right. We're going to get into all these ethical issues in regards to business of bluffing, right? Of saying one thing and, well, this is normal practice. What happens if I'm in a contract negotiation and I don't tell them all the information? Is that ethical? Well, it's business. You know, I'll give you an example, right? A personal example. My father's still angry at me, right? Is that I walked away from a contract offer. Or most of people know that we're looking to leave Stanford, right? So I walked away from a contract offer because I told my father that I wouldn't be able to wouldn't be able to agree to a contract without and look for a job at the same time, right? You have to remember, if you're a rabbi, you can't just go on your lunch break and interview. You get 350 people, right? And everybody and their grandmothers knows that you're interviewing for a position. So my father's like, why don't you just agree and not tell them, right? And deal with it later. And I said, because my father told me a handshake was a handshake. Now that is the worst thing you could tell your parents, that the stuff they taught you was actually you were listening, right? Right? But that's standard ethical. Now people say, but you look out for number one. Well, that's not true, because what are my duties? My rights are look out for number one. I have every right to do that. I would not be going against anything at all in this contract, in this deal. You can ask, my brother's a lawyer. He's a nice guy. We're not going to get there. Thank God he's on our side, right? but I have rights. But then what are my duties? And we cannot allow ourselves to just be influenced by the norms. You'll see, we're going to talk about commercials and advertising. Advertising always, because we're all familiar with that. That are so normal and so normative, and we don't even think about that they're somewhat unethical. Let's continue. Any questions we have so far? Good. I'm a great teacher. All right. Text number two is one of my favorite texts, and I used it as part of my sermon for Kol Nidre night on Yom Kippur because it scares people, and that's really what it's a lot of fun. Anyway, so text number two tells us about it said Rav, in the hour an individual is brought before the heavenly court for judgment, the person is asked the following. Right? So someone goes up before the pearly gates. It's a little different religion, but nonetheless, they go up before the heavenly court at the end of the days, and they ask you the following questions. Number one, did you conduct your business affairs honestly? Did you set aside regular time for Torah study? Did you work at having children? Did you look forward to the world's redemption? Did you engage in dialectics of wisdom? Did you understand one thing from another? Now, you could spend hours going through what this all means, right? We're not going to do that, right? But I could scare you, right? This is based on a verse in Isaiah where it talks about faithfulness, and he defines faithfulness as living a life of faithfulness, being honest in business. But and these are one of the questions you're going to get at the end of the days. Now, to be honest, right, to be intellectually honest, there has never been anyone that they've interviewed who's come back, right, and said, oh, what they ask you? Oh, you're not going to believe this, right? That never happened. But it is based on interpretation of a verse in Isaiah, and no one's been proven wrong either. So, but clearly, this is a concept. These are the things that are fairly important. One thing is to note is, if we're looking in orders And the order of it, the first one is business, right? Study of Torah, saving the world, right? All that other stuff. It's not on the list. It's lower on the list. The number one thing, were you honest in your business dealings? So when we talk about, is this a big deal? Well, yeah, it's a really big deal. And at the end of the days, right, and everyone comes up when their time comes, God willing, in a long time, but when your time comes, the first thing you got to be able to say is, I did everything right. And I remember somebody told me, he said he wants on his tombstone that he was an honest man. That's what he wants on his tombstone. I said, I'll see what I could do, right? and he lived his life accordingly. And that is a very powerful statement. I have to say that it's not an easy thing to do because it's very easy to rationalize. Because especially today, the world looks out for number one, right? Everybody's all about what's all about number one. It's not so simple. Let's see where we've been messing up. Okay, text number three. Text number three is we're going to break down. It's always so late. How does that happen? I'm going to blame Rabbi Raleigh on that, right? But we're going to. There are basically four different types of cases here. If we had 2 hours, I would have. Last year, I taught this class. I took an hour and a half, and I taught drama, so I dumped half of that. That's probably I dumped dramas to a half hour. That's probably why I'm not teaching dramas this year. let's go through some of the cases, okay? And let's go through them without in-depth study, but we'll analyze them. Rebuta says the shopkeeper may not hand out roasted corn or nuts to children because he gets in the habit of coming to him, but the sage is permitted. Stop. Again, let's read it again. Rabbi Huda said, the shopkeeper may not hand out roasted corn or nuts to children because he gets them in the habit of coming to them, but the sage is permitted. What's the problem?
Bribery.
So you can't give out bribery.
Why do the sages
can't? Well, the sages permitted it, right? So you can't get. What's this called, by the way? We call it bribery. Anybody else have another
welfare
term for it? What?
Welfare.
Welfare, no.
Can I get food? Let's see if I understand this.
Sure.
He's saying you can't give candy or whatever to kids because the mothers will come back to his store instead of the other stores?
No, the kids will keep coming back for it.
Right. So what?
And then they will purchase something.
No, no, I don't.
Then they're going to expect it. Expectation.
What's that?
Why would he care if the kids come back or not? If they're not spending money there.
Ultimately, the kids' parents are going to come back.
Right.
So
that store. Right. Now remember, what is this guy selling?
Whatever. Doesn't
right.
Matter.
Doesn't matter. He's not selling nuts and candy. It's not like he's going, you go to the bakery, right? I go to the bakery and I bring my little kids and they always give me, you know, the kids cookies and whatever, right? So we go back the next day too. No, we don't do that. I actually tell them not to because I give the supervision and I tell them I don't want to have a conflict with that. And of course, then they say, you don't want to, they give the kid, the cookie to the kid and say, oh, you want to take it away from him? And her? And like, thank you for that. But, so I try to yes, Larry.
So we're saying that you want to conduct your business and sell your product on the basis of how good your product is and not on the peripheral stuff like candy for the kids.
Well, when you give candy to kids, right, so the kids will come back and the parents will feel inclined to go, to come to you.
Right.
Right? That is a marketing scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is there anything wrong with it?
Yeah.
Well, yes and no.
Some sages.
It gives, perhaps gives you an unfair advantage,
which
right?
Which
could be that you are going, you're finding a way. It's not, you're not based on product. It's not based on personality. It's not based on whatever. You're going around trying to, you're manipulating kids, right? You're going around giving kids candy so their parents will come and buy your product. That's a little bit. You're going kids, right? If you're saying. You're going around and you're giving, 0% financing and $1,000 cash back. Well, that's a whole different story, right? Because you're dealing with adults. I don't get the purpose of $1,000 cash back, but that's a whole different story, right? Right? Sounds ridiculous anyway. Sounds good on the commercial. But if all of a sudden you're dealing with kids and you're saying, like, oh, kids, yeah, come on, kids, right? And the kids are going to come back and they're hooked on the nuts. I don't know what's in the nuts, but they're hooked on the candy and whatever it is. Then you have an unfair advantage, and you're manipulating children to get your business. So they say, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you can't do that. Can't do it. The sages say it's okay. Right? You basically have, I ask the question, what's the difference between the sages and Rabbi Yehuda? You'll find that the sages give, the Rabbi Yehuda is there to protect the consumers. And clearly that's a common theme for the minority opinions. The sages are saying, listen, at the end of the day, business is business, right? And you got to give the consumer a little more credit, right? Consumers should be able to handle themselves, and you have that this is part of a marketing scheme. And it's not terrible. I mean, even when we originally thought of it, it wasn't terrible. Think about it. Wow, you know, you're manipulating kids, right? What do they do in commercials? What do they do in commercials?
Yeah, right.
It's all about manipulating kids.
The wrong thing with kids is because they're not of age. They're not.
I guess they're right. Well, it specifies children.
Right.
Right? So it's they can't make their own decisions. They can't think rationally and say, well, maybe I don't really need that. Or maybe this is not, maybe, you know, it's a form of manipulation to people, to individuals that can't make their own decisions.
Sounds like everybody.
It would be okay to give out the corn to the buyer of the bagel?
Well,
just not the buyer of the bagel.
Again, the Talmud specifies children,
right?
It implies that, you know, listen, at the end of the day, a consumer has a brain, right? And should be able to say, okay, I'm making a distinction. Yes, you're my friend. Thank you for giving me corn or the $1,000 cash back that I have no use for, right? Just knock down $1,000 off the price. So the consumer can do that and then can discern which is the better place to buy. The children are just going to constantly go back to this guy. And they go back to this guy, so then the parents are going to be in the store, are going to feel obliged to buy, etc., etc. It is an unfair advantage, says Rabbi Judah, Rabbi Huda. The sages disagree. They say it's part of it. I like to call the sages like the Associated Press. The equivalent of the Associated Press. Who are the Associated Press? I don't know, but they have stories. It says AP, right? The sages were the majority opinion. In other words, they weren't just like, hi, we're the sages. Sages were different people. There was a minority opinion, and then there were majority opinion in the same room. They said, we disagree, you're crazy. And they would have that. So sages were different people all the time. Yeah.
In the time of the sages, of course, they didn't know from diabetes, and they didn't know from allergies.
Right. This wasn't like a peanut issue here. Right, I was in this when I was teaching in the school. They said they had this big advertisement. They said we're now a nut-free school, and I'm like, I beg to differ. So yes, today you have all these, not whatever. You're right. Then there's dangers, et cetera. This is more just a marketing scheme, right? This is a way to get the kids into the store. Again, what it's there for is to tell us we should just be more conscious of all of this. Right? You look at a commercial and you see these cereal commercials or whatever, the toy commercials, and they're telling the kids, you have to do this, you have to do this, right? Or they're preying, P-R-E-Y, very often, this is what marketing does. I took a course in marketing, right? And you like laugh. You're like, are people that stupid? And the answer is yes, right? They really are. You prey on their, more than gullibility, you prey on their insecurities, right? So when you prey on adults' insecurities and you say, yeah, I have to look like this, that, and the other thing, right? So they say, oh, you're right. And how many people join gyms and use it twice, right? We're all here, we're in a gym, right? We're studying, right? But you prey on kids' insecurities or prey on kids' gullibilities, so then you're already leaning towards a sleazeball. The sages say it's okay. The parents got to learn how to smack the kids and say, no, we're not going here. Okay, that's case number one. Case number two. We're in line number three. And he may not lower prices, but the sages say this is commendable. Well, let's back up. Why do they lower price? Why do businesses lower prices?
Competition.
Competition, right? So why would the individual opinion say it's not okay to lower prices?
Because it'll force someone else out of business.
Because it forces someone else out of business, right? What happens? Have you gone across America and you'll notice that there are a lot of these little stores that used to be around that are no longer there. And you only see Home Depot, right, or Walmart, or whatever it is, and these small mom-and-pop stores are gone because the other places lower their prices and they push them out, right? So, now, who wins? Well, that's a whole discussion. But there are business, that we're looking at the rights of the business owner to a certain extent. The rights of the business owner, the individual's been, you gotta worry about the rights of the business owner. If you keep lowering prices, you're gonna put other people out of business. It's not fair. Bigger places can do this more than others. And the sages say it's commendable. Because at the end, we do believe in a certain sense of capitalism, right? And survival of the fittest. And who is really supposed to end up winning there? Because the consumer is going to win at some point, right, when you have price. But you are, but again, it's a debate. What are you focused on? Are you focused on the buyer's rights or are you focused on the seller's rights? Let's continue. Case number three, I wasn't a big fan of, but let's see if we can figure it out better. Maybe you can teach it to me because I had issues. Line number four. He may sift out the poor parts of beans, according to Abishol. He may not sift out the poor parts of beans, but the sages permit it. But the sages concur that he may not sift out the poor parts on top of the storage bin, which leaves the rest unsifted, for this can only mean to deceive. Now, the last part makes sense, right? I thought. It's very simple, right? You go to the, you buy, give me 2 pounds of beans or whatever it is, of bagels, right? Or strawberries, right? And you have the really beautiful strawberries on top, and you got the moldy strawberries in the bottom, right? So clearly that's wrong. So apparently, but the first part he was saying is that if you sift out, you make it only good strawberries, so then the assumption is that the price goes up. I didn't really follow that, right? Somebody in the other class was explaining to me, but I didn't follow it then either. I was just being polite and saying, oh, that makes sense. they're going to get that tape. I'm going to be in trouble. Anyway, but the last part makes a lot of sense. And, you know, basically deception is wrong. Now, if they deceive all the time, right? Someone was just telling us, they told me in another class, they had a story of somebody, they went in, they bought a case of, a thing of strawberries, and 8 of them were good, 2 of them were lousy, right? So if you're advertising that says, you'll have 80% of our strawberries are good, well, that makes sense, right? And that's fine. But if you're advertising that we have 100% good strawberries, which you assume that's correct, that's what they're advertising, that's what they're pushing, so that is called deception. You hid it. And you hid what the facts were, and that's unacceptable. Right? You have, and it's very easy to do that. I remember I was talking to somebody, I was at their house. They were selling their house, right? They were selling their house. Well, let's do the last case, and then I'll tell the story. Okay, case number four, we're on line number 7. One may not touch up the appearance of human beings that is being slaves to be sold. What does that mean? They tell you, like, you know, they give you a heavy jacket, right? You go on a date, you wear some sort of belt to make you look more built or whatever it is, right? Animals or utensils. Talmud then discusses this and says, Shmuel permitted hanging fringes upon a cloak to make it appear thicker. Yehuda permitted putting the shine on embroidered garments. Rabbi permitted smoothing out or beating up rough garments of hemp. Found out what hemp was the other day. Rabbi permitted painting designs on arrows. Bar Shmuel permitted painting baskets. Asked, wait a second, we learned in the Mishnah you're not allowed to do this, right? So it says there is no contradiction. One is the tradition is dealing with the new items. The other tradition is dealing with the old items. You can't spice up old items. You can have a new item that's brand new and you can make it even nicer and sell it for more money on eBay, but you can't take an old item, right, and try to fake and try to make it nicer, right? You take. So I was somebody was selling their house, right, and I was at their house and the realtor comes. Right, and they're showing their house, and the guy's just sitting there like this, right? And he's like, oh, and if you look over there, and you look over there, and you look over there, and I'm like, at some point I realize that they're just sitting there, and I was just a friend, I was happened to be there at the same time, and when the buyer leaves, right, the potential buyer leaves, and I see this huge crack right over here, right? And he's just sitting like this, oh yeah, very nice. That's deception. That's covering up, right? We do this all the time, right? Give it a paint of coat, it'll look better, right? It'll you won't notice these things, right? It'll cover up a lot of these things. So that is deception. When you're dealing with old products and you're trying to spice it up, look at eBay. You'll find 100 things like this all the time, right? Looks like new. Well, why does it look like new? It's not new. You made it look like new, but it's not new, right? And therefore, it shouldn't be. You don't want people to assume that it's better than it is. Yes.
You can take something brand new and try to make it look old and sell it as an antique.
That's true too. And that's deceptive too. That's deceptive too because it's not, point is that it's not an antique. And you have to be up front and you have to say, this is what it is, right? It's nice, you'll be very happy here, but it has a big crack over here and there's nothing I can do to hide it and I shouldn't be trying to hide it as well.
Right.
Okay? These are all things that we see in a very normative way, oh, you know, Don't tell them, right? And I remember we used to go to a garage sale, right? We had a garage sale when I was a kid. They're like, well, place it over here, right? Put it near this, right? Now, there is marketing techniques to try to get things to move better, but ultimately, you cannot try to buy something. You cannot try to sell something that's what it, and just give the impression that it is what it is. I didn't lie. I didn't tell you it was new, right? I just didn't tell you the whole truth, right? That's unacceptable.
There's no deception.
Exactly. And to be upfront. Because there again, what's my rights versus what are my duties? I'm selling you a product. My duty is to make sure that you know exactly what you're buying and not to try to gyp you. Okay, any questions we got so far? Anybody feel guilty yet? All right, let's keep moving. Will the folly fall apart? Well, I would say we probably would live in a better place. Okay, tractate number four. I'm sorry, text number four. Tractate B'Metziah reads as follows. It says, just as there is deception in buying and selling, so too is a verbal deception. That one might not ask another, what is the price of this article, if he has no intention of buying in the first place? Now, oh. Whoa. Well, things are a little different today, because there is window shopping, and where does window shopping come from? There are windows that you want. They want you to window shop, right? So there is this concept, but what the idea is very important to recognize. First of all, is there any financial loss in this?
You're taking his time.
Okay, so assume that he's doing nothing. There's no one else there. He's not going to lose another sale. What is the problem here? What are you doing?
I know the problem. The problem is that. He says you're not supposed to ask if you have no intention of buying, but your intent is what the price is. If you ask the price, you may decide to buy it, or you may not.
Okay, then there's nothing wrong with that.
He's saying if you never intended.
It's only specifically if you never intended. So Sue, what does it do?
It raises the expectation of the person who's
selling. It raises a false expectation to the salesperson. Now, at the end of the day, business is business, right? And this happens all the time. Right, someone comes in and they decide they don't want it. That's fine. That's part of business. Businesses have high and lows. What you're not allowed to do is you're not allowed to create that false expectation. What's going to happen? Right, this saleswoman, whatever it is, owns a store or works in the store and works on commission. Right, so now you come in. And you're trying to buy something. You never had any intention to buy it in the first place. And if that's the case, so they get all excited. They have the Sharper Image store, right? Mm. Where everything costs at least a gazillion dollars, right? So you go in, right? Let's say Rabbi Ira Evan stops by, he sees this chair that massages your brain, right? And you press the button and they take your brain out and they massage it and they put it back and it's all wonderful. It costs a gazillion trillion dollars, right? And the likelihood of me ever affording that is zilch, right? So now I go in, of course, they let you sit on it and get your brain massaged, right? And it warms places that you've never been warmed before. Right? And you sit in the chair, right? And you say, how much is this, right? And they say, oh, it's a gazillion trillion dollars. And I say, really? And they start going through all the features or whatever. Now, I have no intention whatsoever to buy, but this person, right, who's the Sharper Image person, right, is sitting there doing the calculation. Well, 2% on a gazillion trillion dollars is a lot of money, and he's planning his new trip wherever he's going on the sale. If I have no intention to buy, I have created this false expectation. There is no financial loss here. We're not talking about that he's missing. He could have been hanging out with another customer. This is even if there is no other customer, because there are also duties of the buyer as well. Crazy. We live in such a service world. We say, I'm the buyer, I can do whatever. No. There are duties of the buyer as well, and even if there is no financial loss, they still have a responsibility to treat people with dignity. Now, if I come in and I happen to be someone who can buy the brain massager machine, right, and I change my mind and I say, well, you know what? I didn't realize it was going to be a gazillion dollars. I thought it was going to be a little less than that, right? So then I came in with improper intention, and that's highs and lows of the day for the businessman. But if I came in with no intention whatsoever, then I've created that false expectation, and that is unethical. I say, I guess today there is more window shopping. You could say, I'm just looking. In the olden days, right? But, you should be up front as quickly as possible. I mean, again, I'm not sure, because they want you to look, but once you start asking questions, it becomes clearly they start doing the calculations in their head, right? I have one quick story. There's a professor of ethics I forgot what school. He's a very interesting guy. He told me the story years ago, and I just met him again. I reacquainted myself with him, and I said, "You're the one who told me that story." He's like, "Yeah." So it's a great story. He said he went in. He tells the story to his class every year. He went in he needed to buy a vacuum cleaner, and he went into the store, and he went to this big store where they had a lot of people helping him, and he asked all these questions. He wasn't sure which vacuum cleaner to buy. He goes back and forth. Finally, after 20 minutes or whatever it is, he finally decides, based on all the information the saleswoman gives him, this is the vacuum cleaner he wants. He turns out, he says, "Oh, is this much money? Okay, all right, fine. I'll be back." Right? I don't have the money with me. I'll be back. And he comes back about a half hour later, and he goes and he goes to the salesperson, the saleswoman, and he says, "I'm here to buy that vacuum cleaner." And she says, he rings it up, and then he says to her, "I bet you didn't expect to see me again." And she said, "You're right, I didn't." He said, "I want you to know that I know for a fact that this exact precise vacuum cleaner can be bought down the store in another competitor store for $25 less. But I came back here to buy it here from you, because my tradition tells me I had to."
Wow.
Isn't that a great story? And now every time he vacuums, like, it's inspiring to vacuum now, right? Look at this, right? I love to vacuum, right? Because you can remind him of this. So you can't beat that anywhere. He tells the story. He should tell the story to every person in the world. Because, so you lost $25, but what did you gain? That's what it means to live an ethical life. What?
A friend.
You gained a friend. I don't know. Maybe you gained a good story that he has material for every year. And don't underestimate the sermon material you can't beat, right? I'd pay $25 for good sermon material. Yes.
What about, you go down to Mexico, and you get off the plane, and they'll say, "Oh, we'll give you money off your rental of a car if you go listen to this timeshare." And not only that, they may give you $200, they may give you a bag, they may even give you lunch.
So that's their business. So they didn't do that in the olden days.
I know.
Right? But that's their business, and they're in your face.
Yeah, they are.
And they, I know, I've met them. Right? See? Right? Not in Mexico, but I met their cousins across the border. Right? And that they know what they're doing. They have presented themselves. And they, if you have their, I guarantee, if you went through their business, they would say, "How much money do we gain and lose based on this?"
Right.
And there is an expectation that you will say no. So you could accept this because they're giving it to you in your face, and they know that you don't want it at this time. They're trying to convince you, despite the fact that. So it's a little different.
Yeah, I have a vacuum cleaner story.
Another vacuum cleaner story?
Who would have thought? About, trying to sell a vacuum cleaner. The person would come to the house, and even if you didn't buy it, you'd get a free shampoo.
Right.
And I almost, said, "Thank you very much," hung up, but I said, "I have no intention of buying it." Came over, and I felt so guilty, I ended up buying a very expensive
Very expensive, right? So now you'll never vacuum now, right? You stare at that vacuum cleaner, and you're like,
"I'm still paying."
You did the right thing, right? Because if you go in, and we used to do this all the time, right? You're saying, "Well, they're giving this free giveaway," right? If you have, if you call them up, it's different if they're in your face. If you call them up with no intention, right? Let's say, you say, "Mexican, blah, 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 timeshare people, I'm interested in hearing more about your thing," right? So then you reverse the cycle here, and now all of a sudden it's your responsibility because you've initiated it. Now, the end result is the same, but we answer to a higher authority, right? Like Hebrew National. And so at the end of the day, you have to say, "Well, what were the intentions?" Yes.
These theories here have been written back 2,000 years. today's marketing things are different. Where in those days you walked into a store, nothing had a price on it. Whatever the traffic will bear, that man will sell it to you.
Right.
Today, you could go into a store and see that vacuum cleaner, and it has a price on it.
That's correct.
You don't have to even talk to anybody. You just walk
That's
out
correct.
And you go to the next place.
That's correct. But if you have, but they do have these nice people who go, can I help you? Right? And
right.
The question is at what point, meaning if they have a big sign in the store that says, oh, 1995, right? So then you're going to look at it, and then they can say, can I show you this, right? So that's part of their marketing technique, right? But if I'm going in with no intention to buy in the first place, and I'm just good fooling around, right? Or in the case of this of my friend who went around and actually didn't have intention to buy, but they took the spirit of the law and said, I'm getting as much information, I'm milking this. It's my service, my rights. He didn't have any responsibility whatsoever, but I'm milking the system as much as I can, right? And then I'm going to save money. We do this all the time, right? I do this all the time. I'm a horrible person, I'm admitting it. Right? Because the natural tendency is to say, well, I can get it so much cheaper over there, right? His point was, is that you have created, this is called Onat Dvarim, and it is a biblical prohibition. It is the equivalent of any other biblical prohibition, right? And you are doing something unethical. More than you're doing biblically unethical.
What about it's not true generally in this country, but you go to a foreign country and you go shopping and you're
in Africa per se, right? Hypothetically. Right.
And you're told you can bargain there. No, is that ethical?
You can bargain in Israel.
Of course, you can bargain everywhere. You can bargain here too, by the way. People have gone away from bargaining. It's disappointing, right? Right. You got to hang out with my mother-in-law. Boy, she'll humiliate you like anything. Right? You're sitting there going, oh, God, it's okay. I'll pay for it. Like she's one of those people like, you know, she needs to bargain. It's part of like the process, right?
My husband's like that.
It's an outlet. I don't know what else she would do otherwise, right? So. If that's fine. You're allowed to bargain. That's business. Right? I'm handling, right? You want to sell me something, I want to buy it. There's nothing wrong with that. As long as the intention is, now if I just do this for fun, right? And then I handle, and then I leave, right? That's unethical. Not if they didn't meet my price, but I have to have the intention to buy. We're going to skip text number 5, and we'll highlight text number 6. I think it's important. It's a very important text. This is the Midrash, the Sifra, which is the oldest rabbinic commentary on the book of Vayikra. Okay, so now we know what it is. You shall not put a stumbling block before the blind. You've heard this before?
Yeah.
I didn't write it. It comes from the Bible, right? In Leviticus. Leviticus is also known as the book of Vayikra. Very good. Right? Before the end of the year, we're going to get it right. Before someone who is, thank you, and they still didn't get it right. Before someone who is blind as regards to a certain matter. Do not just someone who's blind, who's blind as regarding a certain matter. Do not say to your neighbor, sell your field and buy a donkey, when your actual intent is to deceive him and buy his field for yourself. And should you claim, but I gave him good advice, such a thing is a matter of the heart, as written in the end of the verse, you shall fear your God, I am the Lord. The verse says, Lo tiken mechshol lefnei iver, do not put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, Ani Hashem, I am the Lord. And you should fear, and you should fear the Lord, and you should fear your God, I am the Lord. Right? That's the term. Now, because there's obviously, it's not to be taken literally, right? We're not just talking about any blind person, someone who is blind in an issue. Right? Someone who doesn't know any better. Or just doesn't fully have all the information. So you're going to give him lousy advice. It could be in your own best interest. It could be not. It doesn't matter, right? Is that you're not allowed to do that. And who's going to know? God knows, right? There are you can say that even with an advantage. Well, it's better for him at the end. God knows what your intentions were. Now, what is a classic example of this? Commercials. Salesman. I'm a salesman, right? I sell bagels. Still in the bagel store, right? I sell bagels and I say to you, right, you need these bagels. right? You don't even know what's in these bagels. These bagels, you eat these bagels, it'll change your life, right? These are life-changing bagels. You'll eat this bagel, everything will run through you, everything will whatever, it'll be great, it'll be fantastic, whatever. And you say, oh, really? Well, I've never heard of bagels like this, right? Right? You need carbohydrates, right? Everybody knows that. Carbohydrates is the latest thing, right? After Atkins passed away, right? It's all about carbohydrates. And I am basically giving this pitch. Why am I giving this pitch? Do you need these bagels? No. Right? Let's get out of the bagel business first. I got them selling cars. So you go to a car and you say, I got a family of three, right? I'm on this and this income. I got a family of three. And I need a safe car. Okay. Oh, you got a family of three. You're going to need the DVD and the GPG and the QPG, whatever, right? And, oh, listen, you need the stuff that air conditions all different parts of the car and the body and the whole thing. Oh, and of course you have to get this insurance and that insurance and whatever. By the way, I was told all these insurances are fraud. I mean, you need insurance, but they have all these warranties, whatever. You need this, that, and the other, whatever. At the end of the day, you came in, you were going to spend $20,000, and now you're up to $47,000, because now fully loaded, right? You didn't know that it didn't come with windows, right? And it's now everything's fully loaded, whatever, and that. And you're like, what? And this guy said, you have to have it. Of course you have to have it. Now, you didn't really have to have it. But the business, the salesman, is now putting a stumbling block in front of you. You see a commercial, right? And they give you these pitches. And they're saying, you need to do this. Or a telemarketer or anything. You'd have to do, well, a second. Are you really is this in my best interest? Right? It is, what are the customers, are you in the customer's best interest? And if you say, well, of course, I'm trying to help, right? Well, you're trying to make a deal. And you're trying to sell as much as possible. Here we are thinking that, oh, the guy's a good salesman, he's a born salesman. No. If you put someone in a situation where you're giving them advice and you're telling them, you're talking quick, right? They're all talking very quick, right? And I can't think straight. Now, oh, of course, I need this. My wife comes up, she's like, don't tell me you did that. Oh, man. I don't know. It sounded good at the time, right? That's the famous lesson. At the time, it sounded brilliant, right? Then the salesperson is putting a stumbling block in front of you. Wait a second. This is business. No. This is biblically unethical. And even though these are the norms of society, it doesn't necessarily mean it's right. Now, I'm not saying that everything is so black and white, because as you said before, that marketing and techniques have changed. We're in the 21st century, right? Things are not as they were before, and everything's in your face. But, you should be cognizant of all of this as you run your business, as you talk to people. You should be kind of them. Don't let the norms of society dictate what is right and what is wrong. Right? We have a tradition, and the tradition has been around for 3,300 years. Now, you could say things change with the times, etc., but at the end of the day, everything I told you probably makes some sense. Right? And said, whatever. My job here, I think, is just to give you fodder to think about things differently than what you did before. So next time you see one of those commercials that are, and you're about to run out and whatever, just think about it. Was this done the right way? Right? Was this ethically done correctly? And don't allow society to dictate what is ethical and what is not. And don't think just because someone follows a law makes them a tzaddik. We have, as we said, we have a different set of laws than that. You follow those laws, right? And you follow them right, that makes you an honest person. That doesn't make you great. It makes you an honest person. And that's what our goal is supposed to do. Any questions?
What about food products?
Oh, my God. But you have to understand, I'm very biased. Before I say this, you have to remember, I believe, and I'm putting this on tape, there's a biblical verse that says, "V'arta hara mikirbecha," that you have to remove the evil from among you. And I believe that first to pharmaceutical companies and most importantly, the insurance companies, who are evil and the root essence of evil and should be all destroyed. So, so you can ask your question, but you know where I'm coming from, right?
So.
Well, now they have that guy at the end of who talks really fast, right? And that, well, the FDA has, listen, there are countries where that's not, they don't care, right? So, thankfully, you live in the United States of America where you have these things that are here to protect you, but I know I have a friend who works for a pharmaceutical company, and he tells me all the things that they're holding back, that they're not saying, that they're waiting for, whatever. These could save lives. You have something that could save lives, potentially save lives, and you're holding it back, right? Or you have something that could kill somebody, and you're pushing it. You're selling it, and you're lobbying, and you're this and that. So they're all a bunch of whatever. In Hebrew, there's a term called mamzerim. A mamzer is a biblical bastard, but right. But again, I'm biased, and I try not to talk bad about anything except those two groups. any final questions? Okay. Wishing you all a chag kasher v'sameach, as they say in the old country, a zisim Pesach. That's what they used to say in Brooklyn in the old country. But you should have a wonderful Passover. You should re-experience the Exodus and feel a true sense of celebration. We've gone 25 out of 30 classes. I think we have a sense of accomplishment. All those who have been here in most classes, l'chaim, take an extra cup of wine this year, right? And go for it, right?
Yeah.
Elijah's not coming. I'm saying every year.
Now you're coming.
You fill it up. It doesn't mean he's coming. He's not Santa Claus. He can't be everywhere.